Sassy Jack Stitchery is sponsoring this week's show with Sue Reed. Now is the time to sign up for the upcoming October workshops with Jackie Duplessis. The October 3 and 4 workshop is called Hold Deer, a beautifully decorated tiger maple project box with two storage areas and a pincushion in the lid. That's followed by Love That Red, a drawn thread sewing roll-up sampler on October 5 and 6. And October 7 will be a bit of a mystery that will involve a fall flame stitch and a beautiful bespoke wooden box. Then on October 8, you can stitch the Morning Glory work basket. Time is short, so sign up for all of these workshops, and sign up is by email only. There are several additional events and activities on the horizon. Keep up with all of it through the Sassy Jack's website, sassyjackstitchery.com, the Jack's Journal newsletter, or the Sassy Jack's Facebook page. The new shop is opening in mid-October, so it may be time for a road trip. Thanks to Sassy Jack Stitchery, and now our conversation with Sue Reed. Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr, and you are listening to Fiber Talk, the twice-weekly podcast for needlework artists. And this week, we're going to talk about counted canvas design with Sue Reed. Sue, welcome.
Thank you very much, Gary.
Oh, done some of your pieces. Fun.
Yeah. Oh, you have? Have you? No, I was going to ask if you finished them. I'm not going to do that as a teacher. So hopefully you've learned something from them. I'll just keep it at that.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate the,
See, I've taught a long time.
I have finished two of them, but I have a couple more that, we aren't going to talk about.
I can understand that.
Yep. The what I love about yours, the two things. One is that they're not large as a rule. Just about all of them, less than 10-inch canvas.
No, I have some that are a little bit larger when they're stitched. The design size I try to not make overly large, but it depends upon what's going into the piece.
Yeah, yeah. But it's the size, you know, not big. So it's not a lifetime project. But,
oh, hopefully not. Well, I can see it is for two of your pieces that you have of mine.
Well, yeah, we'll set me aside, okay?
Okay.
We'll just set me aside. But also some really nice stitching challenges in there, and to me you find a nice balance of challenge and ability to complete that I think that's just a nice, it makes for a nice package. A person can learn something in advance but not feel overwhelmed. I don't know if that's conscious on your part, but on this end, that's the way it strikes me, and I really enjoy that part.
Thank you. Yes. What I try to do in my pieces is to teach something. Now, it may be repetitious teaching, for example, like color matching watercolors or water lilies. I think a piece is worth taking if you learn something.
Yeah.
So therefore, I try to put that in. Yes, I try to put something in there that is going to teach you something. Now, does it mean everyone taking the class is going to learn this? No, because they might already know it. They might look at things a little different way with the way I presented it. That's fine. They may choose not to do what I suggest doing. That's fine, too. This is their piece. But I just like to impart some knowledge and challenge people in some way each time I do a class.
Do you
on all of these designs?
Yeah. Do you challenge yourself with a lot of these? Okay.
Oh yes.
Okay.
Definitely. With the knot pieces I have, I got into that when San Bernardino asked me to design a piece. They were setting up Nina Gores. When she passed away, she left some money for them to continue recruiting members and continuing to build their guild. And Diane Ackley at the time approached me about designing a piece. She said, Nina loved taking your classes. So I spoke to Diana and said, okay, yeah, I remember Nina, but with the hundreds of students I've had, I don't necessarily remember specifics about them. So I said, what did Nina like? Well, she loved reds and blacks. She loved Oriental. So when I designed Nina's legacy, I used stitches that were the Oriental stitch. I used a Japanese braid. And I tried to create a Chinese knot. In my other life, I shouldn't say my other life. When Phil first got out of the Navy, that's basically how I started stitching. My mom was not a stitcher. My grandmother was a seamstress. But my parents, my dad was in his 50s and my mom was in her 40s when I was born, and I had a younger brother. So we were a late in life family for them. And I ended, my mom, like I said, my mom said Grammy was a seamstress, but she died a couple of years after I was born. So I never really knew my grandparents. My mother had no interest at all in stitching, nothing at all. I mean, she kept the most immaculate house you can imagine. And that was her thing. She loved seeing what I was doing, but for her to sit down and do something like that was a total waste of time. And when we were stationed in the Navy, we were down in Jacksonville. I picked up a kit, needlepoint kit. Uh-huh. And I just needed something to do. We had one little boy. I was pregnant with our second son. And I just needed something to do when Phil was at base. And I picked up a needlepoint kit and worked it. And I thought, oh, my golly, look at all this yarn I have left over. Oh, I could do an inch around all the way around. Oh, I have some more yarn left over. Well, that was probably the best example of the corduroy stitch you have ever seen in your life. You flip it over to the back and it was a row of half cross, row of continental, half cross continental. So that kind of got me into stitching. It was just basically needed something. I needed something to do. And when we got back, I was home with the boys. Phil was working, and he said he'd get home from work, and I would tell him what Bert and Ernie were doing much of the day. Not necessarily our two boys, but Bert and Ernie.
That's not a good sign there.
No, he said, you need to get out and be with some adults. So I took a night class at our local high school on needlepoint and crewel. And I ended up enjoying what I was doing. We had an exhibit at the end of the year. We had to design our own piece. So can you guess what I designed for the exhibit?
Mm.
Bert and Ernie.
Why not? Yep.
Then I went on and I took another adult course in it. And after that, the boys were old enough. My mom lived in the apartment downstairs and my husband was working. He said, you know, you really need to get out and talk to other adults. So he found a job for me at a place called Windsor Button Shop.
He found a job for you. Okay.
Oh, you know what the job was? It was advertised to sell buttons onto button cards.
Oh, my.
Which was kind of a kicker because he could never get me to sew a button on his shirts. I said, you were in the Navy. You learned how to do this. So
yeah,
therefore.
Yeah, not your problem.
So I ended up going there and applying. And since I had taken a few needlework classes, the store manager said, heck, I'm not putting you behind the button counter to sew buttons on cards. I'm putting you in the handcraft department. That's kind of really how it started. I was sent to the Elsa Williams School Needlework. Because the shop owners, Mr. Rittenberg, used to teach business classes at Elsa Williams School.
Boy, there's a name from the past, huh?
Oh, it sure is. My. Sure is. So he decided, I would like you to teach some needlework classes in shop. So that's basically how it started. I went, and it was a week of immersion in needlework, which I absolutely loved, 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 loved. It was 2 days of needlepoint, 2 days of crewel. And one of the teachers for that first session was a lady named Joan Schoaf. And Joni became my mentor. She pushed me and encouraged me to join ANG, to get involved in the Master Teacher Program, to keep pursuing teaching needlework. She said to me at the time, I see such potential in you that you can't see in yourself right now. So I am strongly encouraging you. And she became a very dear friend and a mentor of mine. And she's the reason that this has happened.
Wow. And so, and also then you have very deep ANG roots then.
Oh my golly. When I saw San Diego had posted that I have been in an ANG member for 42 years, I thought, oh damn, I'm old. I could not believe it.
Wow.
Yes. Evidently I've been in the ANG organization for a long time.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, if you show a picture of me, did you show the on vacation picture or did you show the one, oh gosh, she really needs a vacation? Or are you not telling me?
I haven't shown either one, so.
Oh, so you're not going to tell me. I have to watch the podcast, huh?
No, you tell me which one. You want?
No, it doesn't make any difference.
Okay. I'll show them both, then it won't matter, okay?
But that's really how I got into it. I was, I had a Bachelor of Science in Education, and I taught fifth grade for a couple of years until Phil went into the Navy, and much to the consternation of both mothers, I resigned to join him.
Yeah.
So I traveled with him for the 4 years, basically. And as fifth grade, we team taught. The other teacher, Ruth Rocket, taught English and reading. I taught math and science. So math I've always loved, and I think it shows up in the geometrics.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Without a doubt. Boy, that, you know, that just a hint there of the sacrifice you make as a military wife or spouse of any kind. You know, yeah, you give up a career to be with to spend the time. Yeah. Oh, boy.
I have a lot of admiration. Now, I can't really call myself that much. We were 4 years. 4 years in the military.
Mm-hmm.
But I have such admiration for people, the spouses of military who are lifetime or career military.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't compare myself to that. I really can't compare myself. Mm. So,
yeah, very unstable life. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it sure is.
Yeah.
You just never know.
Yeah. Yeah, we need to appreciate that. So the needlepoint technique then really just kind of evolved out of the classes and what came to you rather than some choice you made.
Yes, that's basically how it started. And I found out that I really loved stitching, loved it. This was something I guess I could say it was a passion of mine. I loved creating. I loved working with threads. And part of being a teacher, I love teaching needlework.
Mm-hmm.
What Joni taught me very early on, Joni Shove taught me very early on, is she said, in order for needlework to keep growing, you have to make sure you give all of your knowledge. You don't hold back and say, okay, I'm going to, yeah, this is just going to be for me. You just pass everything on. So my booklets, years back, I don't know when you started needlework, but years back in a class booklet, you would have instructions. And oftentimes it was this to be demonstrated in class, this to be explained in class. So not everything that would allow you to finish a piece on your own was put into a booklet. Well, when Joni said you share everything you know, when I first started doing booklets, that is not how I wrote them. I didn't write to be demonstrated in class. I did demonstrate it in class, but I wanted to put everything in my instruction booklet so that a stitcher can pick up the piece. And as I've said to my students over many years, when you pick up the piece in 12 years, you can figure it out and complete it. So I wanted to put everything that I knew about the piece into the piece itself for instructions.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the way that's just the way I was brought up as a teacher and the way it was suggested to me through Joni. And I thoroughly agreed with her. Now, did some of her booklets have to be demonstrated in class? Yes. But that was the style of writing way back in the 80s.
Right.
70s, yeah. 80s, yeah.
So this really came together for you. You discover you love stitching, and then you're a teacher and able to put both of them to work. That's terrific.
Best of both worlds, isn't it?
Because teaching is great. I'm a former teacher, and when I gave it up to become a magazine editor, which I've done for 40 plus years now, do you miss teaching? Well, to me, teaching is I'm just teaching in a different way to a different audience through the magazine, and
yes.
and effectively with your designs. You're doing classes, but you're also teaching through your designs in a different way too, rather than having a bunch of fifth graders sitting in front of you.
That's right.
Yes,
it is. It's a different way of a different avenue for teaching. And right. I have to tell you, I enjoy this a lot more than I did a set classroom. But I'm also that many years out of teaching. If I had gone back when we got out of the Navy, and at that point, there really weren't the jobs available for teachers. Originally, we were going to settle down in the Newport, Rhode Island area, where we spent a couple of years before Jacksonville and North Chicago, Illinois, a naval base out there with this really no water,
right,
which is
right.
Something else.
I've never quite figured that out.
No, we couldn't either. When I picked him up for boot camp graduation, he said, first of all, take me to water. So we drove over to Lake Michigan to see the water. He said, well, this makes sense. But I just found that, my train of thought just derailed. Sorry about that, Gary.
That's quite all right. So then you really found the teaching, a channel for your teaching, your desire to teach through your needlework. And today, is it the classes that still drive you, or is it the designs and teaching through the designs?
Right now, I think it's the designs and teaching through the designs.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly, my last ANG seminar was in Houston, and at that point, I was struggling to get through it because I was ill, and it wasn't until I got back home that we could diagnose the issue. But I taught there, and I taught for one of the Texas groups, stay to teach. And after that got me under control, COVID hit.
Yeah.
And
we're all going to have that gap in our lives, aren't we?
Yeah, we really are. And I found that I could teach cyber classes. I could teach via Zoom. I've done some Zoom classes with Chicago A&G, for example. I found I could teach in different ways other than necessarily leaving the confines right during COVID. Well, I didn't want to travel, actually. And because of a husband's health issues too. It was just something that was not practical for me and not wise for me. And though I'm saying that, last year I had the opportunity, Sandy Arthur needed a teaching assistant on a Rhine River stitching cruise.
Mm.
And I just didn't dare say yes because I was scared of COVID. I didn't want to bring it back. So I got clearance from three of my doctors for that. And every single one of them said, are you insane turning down an opportunity like that? One of them even wanted, she said, I will carry your suitcase for you if you take me with you. So I figured, okay, if they weren't concerned and I was taking all the precautions that I needed to take myself, then I was going to go for it.
Yeah.
So I did. But other than that, and a class next month that I'll be teaching for the Why Not chapter, down in the Carolinas. I really have not been traveling to teach outside of the area. I do private classes, several private classes a month. But
the technology still gives you an outlet so you can at least communicate and share then.
Yes, yes. And I love the fact I've done a lot of pieces through Pat Carriz. She works with some of the California, the Pacific groups. And I've done several classes. And I have two more scheduled with her coming up. And that has given me an opportunity to teach because when I do the cyber workshop, I try to put into each of the lessons, or at least the beginning lesson, everything that I would talk about in front of a classroom. So this is what you look for. This is the proper way to stitch a line of tent so that you have the wrap on the back of your thread. I take pictures and put that in, and I've done that on, I think, two or three cyber workshops now. I've started putting all this extra addendum material in that I would basically be demonstrating and showing if I were there in a face-to-face class.
Mm-hmm. How did the design part start? I mean, you got a math background, so but clearly there's a creative side in that head of yours somewhere. how did that start? Was it literally just, hey, I can add on to this, and it evolves from there? Or did you one day sit down and say, I think I can create my own?
I had to start designing when I was in the Master Teacher Program. That was one of the things they...
You were forced.
Yes, I was forced, which was a good thing, because from there, you have evolved, and your designing and evolves throughout your growth, and what you learn works, what you learn does not work. So that's basically where the designing first, I was pushed into it. Mm-hmm. And grateful for it. I just have no qualms about it and no regrets at all for the going through the Master Teacher Program. It was worthwhile. And when I was in it, it was a much longer time to get from journeyman to senior master. The program was still somewhat in the newer stages, and it's been refined down since then. And the time frames have been cut back for completing different levels. But at the time, working outside of the home, I was working full time. And Phil was working full time, and we were working off shifts, and the boys, and taking care of the family and the boys. I found that for me, that little bit longer time frame was just what I needed. I think if it had been shortened, for me, I might have dropped out because I would have just been too pressured to get things done. But yeah, I could work under their time frame and accomplish things, but not feel as if I had to stay up all night and do it. So
this picture is amazing to me. You're working off shifts, managing a house, raising two boys, and still stitching and learning and advancing your skills. Wow.
Well, you know what? It's what you did back then.
Yeah.
I was younger. That's the major
that
thing.
Helps.
I was younger. We have four grandchildren. Two have graduated from college, and one's in middle school, and the other is in fourth grade. And I used to babysit the college age, college graduates now. I had them 2 days a week when their mom and dad were working. And at the end, I should probably say this because I think they're going to listen to this podcast, but I'll tell you, at the end of the time, I was glad to give them back. And Phil would say to me, you know, this is the reason people our age don't have kids.
Yep. Yep.
So,
yep.
But yeah, it was, and I managed it all, and, you know, I got through it. Grateful I did. There's nothing that happened in my life that I would regret.
Yeah. Well, you're right. That's what we did. You found a way, but through it all, you found a way with needlework too, and kept that joy of stitching going. And now look, it's carried you all the way through here. It's pretty neat.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
I've had some, oftentimes I get asked in class, they figure I use a computer to do my designs, to create the line elements.
Mm-hmm.
When they get my classes have line drawn canvases in them, and that can be time consuming. I'm just finishing up, I have two classes I'm kidding for right now, and I'm just finishing up one, and it does take a while to do it. But I design and stitch right on canvas. I don't prepare anything on the computer, don't try to figure out classes. I'll tell you what has been absolutely helpful to me. I look at stitch books, and I have quite a few stitch books, the way my mother used to look at recipe books. She would go through and she'd put a note down for something she liked. Any recipe she liked, you'd see a little piece of paper sticking out of it. Well, I do that with stitching books and post-it notes.
Mm-hmm.
So I will go in, if I'm thinking of a new design, I basically wash my mind of everything I've done to this point, and I will go in and start thumbing through stitch books and think, oh, well, this looks interesting. I haven't tried this. Or, oh, I like this stitch, and let me try that again. And I have books that have post-it notes all over the place. And that's basically how I start. And I start with an idea for a line design, and then it grows from there.
That's interesting, because I wondered how you did that, because if we go through your catalog, I don't see you getting stuck in a rut.
As far as the designs themselves, the appearance of them, some of my students will tell you I'm stuck in a rut with certain stitches.
Oh, well,
I love Nabucco. My classes here used to say, you know, it's not a class of Sue unless she puts Nabucco in it somewhere. And I have loved Japanese braid. And I've done that several different ways with doing the Japanese braid and adding a bead to it so it's beaded. Or done it in, for example, in impressions, and then a petite silk lame braid for the other arm coming in. That was one of the stitches on Nina's piece, the Japanese braid edge, that has such a rich appearance to it that I love stitching with it and I love creating with it. And actually, one of the pieces I think I sent to you, Through a Garden Window,
mm-hmm.
has Japanese braid on the border, but it also has the four strong elements. It's Japanese braid turned at a right angle and also shaded going down. So I wanted the students not only to learn about how they can do the Japanese braid, but also what you have to do to get it to turn a right angle, what you have to do to make it turn corners to go bordering around a design. So it isn't just a straight line of Japanese braid. There's you have to think this one out a little bit.
Yep. It immediately comes to mind the Montenegrin stitch. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And another stitch I love is long arm Greek cross. And I have done that on quite a few pieces in borders. And I love the challenge of doing it over one canvas thread. But what I really like is doing it in a hand dyed thread, like a water lily silk, and color matching it from the center of the design, midpoint of the design, to each corner on all four sides. I have a piece, I think it's Spirit. It's not one of the pieces I sent to you, but Spirit is done that way, where you color match your water lily silk. And this is something that drives some of my students crazy, and I love seeing the reaction in class. But a lot of students don't like spaghetti hanging off of their canvas.
Uh-huh.
And people that aren't familiar with the term spaghetti, it means a lot of threads hanging off of their canvas. So this piece, if you wanted to really as accurately as possible color match, you're going to be working with 2, 4, 6, 8 stitching lengths of thread, two on each side, and you're going to work a few stitches, park it, work a few more stitches and park it. So I like that challenge of getting somebody to realize that they can color match. It might take a little bit of time, depends upon how precise you want to be to color matching. That's another thing I like teaching in class because it's just fun.
Yeah.
It's just fun.
Now, you've been doing this long enough that you've seen the tremendous growth in threads and thread types.
Oh, yes.
As a designer, how do you, I don't know if this is going to come out right, but how do you deal with that so you just don't go crazy and make a mess? How do you, when you have so many choices, so many colors, that's got to be an internal challenge just to keep yourself under control.
It is. What I have learned is to try, well, in my, the last several years of designs, I have tried to keep to basic threads like Vineyard Silk, Pepper Pot, Rainbow Gallery threads, Krynek threads. I have had several pieces that I stitched that were teaching pieces early on where I use threads that are discontinued, and there's been nothing at all that's even a close substitute to
it.
So I think I have learned over the years to just kind of watch what I'm selecting for threads and not go to the ones that may be hard to get.
Yeah, that's come up more than once with designers, is you have to go through that thought process because 5 years down the road, you still need to make sure people can get the threads or substitute without degrading the design. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. And in all of my pieces but one, I have one design only called Fire and Ice that I retired because I can't get some of the little candle, the flames and the drops that I used on the piece. So I retired it after teaching it the last time for Pat Carrez's group. That has all of the same colors, but primarily all of my designs, I give color choices. So there might be three color choices, it might be four. And I like pulling colors and playing with them. I should mention Mardi Gras. Mardi Gras is, I can design a piece, I can't name a piece. So I will often design a piece and bring it to my my local students here and say, okay, give me a name. And two of them said, oh my golly, it's a party. It looks like a Mardi Gras. Well, yeah. Fine, but it's not in Mardi Gras colors. So the first time I put that out, I got flack from a few people that said, that is not Mardi Gras. Well, I said, no, but one of the color options are the purples, greens, and golds of Mardi Gras itself. This was just a name I gave because I needed a name, and that's what my students came up with. That has happened more times than I care to remember.
I got to believe that cannot be fun coming up with names for designs. Yeah.
No. And I like working with Nina's piece too, had the knots on it. And I love working with knots. So some of the pieces I sent to you, like It's Not the Usual, that is a piece that has the knot that I used in Nina's in the center. It's on one of the sides, and like playing with that. And this I will sit and work out on a graph paper, piece of graph paper, because I need to see the over-under layering of stitches.
Yeah.
And Mystery of Life is another one where I had a knot border all the way around, four knots and squares, and then a huge knot in the center. And it... looks complicated, but I learned in kind of trial and error and playing with things that in Mystery of Life, the knots that are at north, south, east, and west points that go from the green and have the gold center, it is basically the same knot replicated four times. And the way it looks different is the color change within the weaving.
Uh-huh.
So again, it's playing around, and I like trying to figure out things like this. So I've kind of become obsessed with knot pieces. I have a couple more on the drawing board that I'd like to try to figure out.
The mathematician in you, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. It's just fun. And I love puzzles. I love mysteries. And I like being able to solve something. So.
Yep. Hey, you got to find the challenge in it for you too. Yep.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. You classify just about all, if not all, of your pieces by stitching skill level. Is that something that you like set out to create a beginner piece, or do you just create a piece and then decide, well, this ended up being more advanced than I'd planned, or this actually ended up being pretty basic, so a beginner can tackle it?
I create a piece.
Okay.
And then work from there. And over my many decades of teaching at seminars, the one thing I have learned is you might put a level on a piece, but what appears to draw the stitcher is the piece itself. Whether they're an advanced stitcher and it's listed as an intermediate, they might sign up for it. If they're a brand new stitcher, they like the piece, they might sign up for it. So you have to be able to adapt and kind of create and teach to the situation.
Mm-hmm.
But I think from my teaching background, to be honest with you, my student teacher, when I first started teaching, his name was Al Minasali, and he said to me, okay, I had a presentation set for that day. He said, okay, put that aside. We're not going to do that. We're going to do this. And I looked at him in horror because I was brand new to student teaching. He said, Sue, what I'm teaching you is you have to be flexible.
Yep.
You can't count on things going the way that you hope they're going to go. You have to be flexible. And that was such an invaluable piece of information. And I've carried that all the way through. If something happens in a seminar class and teaching, I go with it. If we are delayed doing a section and we're not sticking quite to my timeline, my time frame, we go with it. If I have a beginner student in class and the class is an advanced intermediate, I don't spend all my time with that student, but I will make sure that they are comfortable with what they're doing.
Yep.
And something that probably is going to maybe rattle some cages, but when I teach at seminar, I always give my students my room number. Mm-hmm. And say, if you have a question, I am here for the whole time, not just these 2 days of this class. If you have a question, you get in touch with me. And if need be, if we're both free, I will meet you somewhere and get you through it. I will answer your question. This is my email. Contact me. My help to your piece does not extend only until the end of seminar.
Yeah.
And I have had students at seminar. I have only had one student that contacted me because she was stuck on an area. And I sat down with her in one of the stitching areas and helped her with it. I have never found it to be abused, but I feel this is personal. I feel that I need to make myself available to this stitcher who is kind enough to take my class.
Mm-hmm.
But that is just, that's my nature. This is the way I was brought up in teaching. So is it right for every teacher? No, it is not right for every teacher. Do you need the time back in your room? Yes, you do, when you're not talking to anyone. I know what, at lunchtime at seminars, I would go back to my room because I just needed the quiet time.
Yeah.
But yes, this is just something that I have done for many years. You know, this is how you can reach me. This is my email. This is my home phone number. If you have a question, you get in touch with me. I did have somebody reach me, contact me. Email, was it last year or so? She had a piece from years back. It's now, for me, all the information's in storage. And she was asking me questions about it. And I said, well, let me see what I can remember. It's in storage, and I'm not sure whereabouts. So, but we were able to piece together the information she needed to keep her going on it.
Yeah.
But, you know, if somebody is kind enough to take my class, if, for me, it is my obligation to help them any way I can.
Right, right. Well, but that, you know, and that's teaching basics. I mean, I taught science, and for me, it was a fun day was when the kids were all working on a project, you know, in pairs or whatever, and I'm just floating around the room helping. And then, of course, as a teacher, you need to know what kids learn by visually or by reading or verbally. And of course, you have the ones who struggle and the ones who are so advanced that you can't ever keep up with them. And then to work that room and, you know, always remember that person over there who is always struggling and always pop back to help them and make
right.
sure they keep moving forward. And, you know, and the advanced person, you just check in on them and you know, bravo, good job, and that kind of thing. But yeah, that's the fun of teaching, though, is
oh, it is.
Working the room, yeah.
It is, and that is the one thing I miss, the face-to-face contact
yep.
with students. I do miss it. But for right now, that for me, that's
yeah.
That's my life right now,
yeah.
So.
No, I always said that it, for me, teaching, when the bell rang and the door was closed, that's the best time. You know,
yeah.
if I could eliminate all the other stuff and just do that, I'd do it forever. But you can't. So,
yeah, I understand that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. I got to hear about this Rhine River cruise because these cruises pop up all the time. It's got to be so much fun. So you're teaching a class on a riverboat?
Well, this one, Sandy Arthur needed a teaching aide with her who could also sit and help the students. These were Sandy's pieces. It was a blast. I had so much fun. I've taught on two Caribbean cruises, and
uh-huh.
we were in the process of planning an Alaskan cruise, but the travel agent who was planning it unfortunately died unexpectedly, so that never came about because no one else in her travel agency was interested in the cruises. This was a stitcher. But with Sandy's, I had always wanted to do a riverboat, always wanted to do one. My husband and I, over the course of our marriage, have cruised quite a bit. This has been our vacation, and started a gift from my father-in-law when he died. That was the one thing. He left a CD in my husband's name, and he said, "You're to use it for a cruise, you use it to travel."
Uh-huh.
So we kind of got a travel bug, and we've been able to do nice cruises and things like that. But riverboat cruise is something I'd always wanted to do. And the offer came up, and Sandy approached me, and I said, as long as I can clear it with my doctors. And I was really hesitant. I didn't think I could clear it with my doctors, but they said, I told you what they said.
Yeah,
you know,
you're
crazy
yeah.
to even consider not doing
yeah.
it.
Why are you sitting here? Get out of here.
I know it. It was an experience of a lifetime. So I was her aide. She taught. She had a piece set up specifically that we were being taught. Plus, there was little giveaways, and we did a beaded needle case and just various things. But I was there basically to help. You circulate, and the two of us would circulate around the room. I'd sit at a table, help students. The ship had a mask requirement, so if you were traveling around, the ship had a mask requirement.
Yeah.
We were able to take it off in the room where we were located. We had to have COVID testing,
mm-hmm.
So they were being very cautious about this, and all the testing in order to even get on the airplane to fly over. But, oh my golly, it was the trip of a lifetime, and I'm forever grateful to her for the opportunity to do something like this.
Yeah. No, because there are several, you know, through the course of any given year, you'll hear about these cruises, and I've often wondered if, you know, just what that's like. Because like your Carnival cruise ship, I have no interest in that. To me, that's just a petri dish, COVID or not. But But, you know, but smaller operations, it seems to me like that would be more approachable and certainly would be a unique environment.
Oh, it sure was. On the two Caribbean cruises, I mean, this is not our choice of cruise line at all. We have totally stayed away from it, but it was Carnival. This is what the travel agent booked because it was an inexpensive cruise. And we had, on the second time, we had our own room. The first time, we were stitching in a bar that they just didn't want to turn their lights on. But we stitched it when we were at sea. So if you were, you know, if you were in a port, you did not have a class. It was just stitching when you were at sea. And it was fun. I loved it because I enjoy cruising anyway. So this was a great opportunity to do something like that. But the river boat was totally different. Smooth as silk going down and just seeing, going through the various, locks.
Oh, yes, and, yes.
And seeing the storks in the trees and visiting the cathedrals. And
okay, so, all right, so that helps me then. So when you get to the next city down the river, a stopping point, then the needlework gets set aside and you can go enjoy the...
Yes.
Oh, okay.
All yes, right. You can. All the ones with which I've been involved, when you're in a port, that's port time. It's not class time.
I see. Okay. So then actually that's almost better than just going on a cruise because that sailing time, rather than sitting in a bar pounding them down, you're stitching. So you really get that seems like, all right, now it's more appealing to me. Yeah.
Okay, Gary, what makes you think when I go on a cruise, I'm sitting in a bar pounding them down and not stitching?
I'm speaking, you know, the general population, you know.
No, I always bring stitching with me.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Stitching and reading.
Okay.
Oh, I figured you were insinuating something there,
no,
Gary.
No, certainly not. No. No, I mean, I just, you hear the stories about people that just are, they get on those ships and let her flow. And
Gary, Carnival Cruise.
Yeah.
That's the one thing I noticed when we were on that one.
That environment doesn't appeal to me, but to be doing needlework and then to get to a port and go enjoy the history and the city and the sights and then get back on and do some more stitching. I could spend a week doing that. Sure.
Yeah, it is. It is fun. It is fun to do that.
Okay. So then that's what I got to look for if I'm going to do one. All right.
Definitely.
I got a plan. Yeah. So what's coming up for you? You got new designs coming up. You got a teaching thing coming up here next month. Expect that to be the beginning of more or?
Well, actually I have that and I'm doing Four Square Diamonds for Pat Carrez's group. That's another one I'm kidding right now. And then I have Through a Garden Window that I'm doing for Chicago A&G. Is it next year or the year after that? I can't remember now. And I'm also doing some Zoom lectures. I have for years when I would teach, I would throughout the course, well, actually, it was usually towards the end of the class, and then it became throughout the course of the 2 days of classes, I would toss out various tips and hints to the students. Mm-hmm. Okay, if you have a problem threading your needle, turn it the other side and approach it from the other angle. Just various things like that. And a very dear friend of mine, Michael Bourne, suggested, he said, you know, you need to write these down. You need to write them down. And Michael had been in quite a few of my classes. And I finally did jot them down. And I did a lecture, potpourri lecture, I think down on the Cape Cod somewhere, a number of years back. And I had written a few things down. But it's basically tips and hints, how you stretch your bars rather than have to take a ruler every time to measure them. If you measure them, mark the measurement on the ends of each end of the bar, you can quickly see if you need a 12-inch. You can see it without having to pull out a ruler. If you're stitching a, you have a 16, let's say you have a 14 by 14 frame, and you need a piece of thread that's 12 inches long, you can use the 14 inches and measure off. You can use your frame as a ruler. So it's all sorts of tips and hints and tricks that I have collected over my many decades of teaching. And I finally put them down on a piece of paper. And San Bernardino asked me if I would do a Zoom lecture. I think it was earlier this year. So I did a Zoom lecture on the various things. So I have two more of those scheduled, one for Shenandoah Valley and Chicago A&G. And I think they're both coming up the first part of next year. But that's been fun to do because it's just whatever. In classes, it would be whatever came to mind. Yeah. I finally organized it enough to put down a whole thing about stretcher strips and, you know, just organize and talk about it that way. So that's coming up, too. And I think that's it for right now. And new designs, I have one that's on bars. I need to get back to stitching that.
Yeah.
I have found that... I sometimes like stitching pieces where other people, other teachers would tell me just what stitch to put where and what thread to use. Can you imagine that? It's been relaxation. So I've taken a couple of Sandy Arthur online courses. I think two. I have a third one just starting. So that she is teaching and finishing up with one.
Where you,
and
you just take the course and just do what she tells you.
Yes. And, you know, for somebody who's been designing all these years, that is just so freeing and relaxing.
Yeah.
That sometimes that's just what I need in my life right now.
Uh-huh.
But, yes, I do have a couple of pieces in progress on bars, and I just have to get back to stitching them.
Yeah.
I have a tendency to do, like I said, right now it's important that I mark these canvases and get them kitted so I'm set to go with those classes. But, yeah, when I sit down to stitch, I'm caught up on all of Sandy's stuff right now, so I need to get back to my own designs. And I have some other knot pieces that I'm trying to figure the ins and outs of doing them.
Yeah, yeah, that's interesting. We try to encourage people to make pieces their own and use some variation and so on and so forth, and then here's the designer finding release and relaxation by just mindlessly doing what you're told. Okay.
sometimes you just need that in your life.
Yep. Yeah. Have to stop thinking sometime. Yeah.
Yes. That I think that's it. I can just lose myself in the zen of stitching.
Yeah.
There are certain stitches that just lend themselves to just, it's as if you were breathing in and breathing out.
Right.
I had one piece that I just did, I think it was for Sue. It was, I think it was a cyber workshop for A&G. Oh, I have, Peaceful Hearts is coming up for an A&G cyber workshop next year, too. But I had another one that I did. It's called Nocturne. Loved the piece. I taught it, but it does not photograph well because I wanted it in ecru. Ecru's in a soft gold. So it does not photograph well. Some of my local students did it, and she did hers. One did hers in blues and the other in greens. And it's just beautiful. But a piece like that, when I was designing that a number of years ago, my mom was quite sick. And I found that just sitting there in the living room after the kids went to bed, checked on my mom. She was doing okay, but to sit there with the Swa Cristal and the stitch on the Congress cloth, it was just the rhythm of silk going through Congress cloth. Phil was working second shift at the time, so he was out until about 11:30. But I found that just so meditative and so relaxing. And it was one of the pieces I stitched, and there were so many memories that I kind of basically retired it until I brought it out for last year. I think it was a cyber workshop.
Mm-hmm.
But it just had so many memories that it was hard to hard to pull it out, but yet the relaxation that came from it. And I found I had a different sense of it this time, but it was nice memories. I mean, she certainly was around for many years after that, but it was a hard time with her illness. Mm-hmm. So yeah, stitching, the soothing stitch going up and down is just so meditative and can be so relaxing, and you can lose yourself in it.
Yeah, the stress of the day just goes out through the threads. Yep.
You're right. It does.
Yeah.
It does.
Yeah, I'm sure that's interesting, because I'm sure, well, I've heard of singer-songwriters. I just can't do that song because there's just too much behind it. Mm-hmm. And it's tough, so they don't do the song. And I can see that. I can't teach this piece. I can't stitch it. There's too much behind it. Yeah.
Another one of my pieces I didn't send to you, it's called Rays of Hope. It is, I was designing that and I changed the colors on it. And the colors are muted purple, kind of a gray blue, really kind of dull colors. And when I taught it in Winston-Salem, there were color choices, and basically people could select what they wanted as their main color, what they wanted as their secondary color. So they had full skeins and they could just shift things around how they wanted to. And somebody said to me, why is this so muted? Well, it's when the poor children were murdered at Sandy Hook.
Oh.
And that was my mood mm-hmm. at the time. So that my mood came out in that piece. Mm. And Nocturne, my mood came out in stitching that with my mom. So, sometimes what is going on in your life or what you are experiencing in your heart shows up in your stitching.
Yeah. Well, that's the release too, right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
But it's a pretty dull looking piece. I need to restitch it in brighter colors now. But yes, and the memories are there. Like you said, with singers not being able to sing a song because of the memories.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. More to it than just thread on canvas. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. Well, Sue, thank you. Wow. What a ride. Good for you.
Hope it was a good one, Gary.
Oh, yeah. No, it's without a doubt. That lots of great designs there for people to stitch, and I love the teaching aspect. So thanks so much for doing this.
Well, Gary, thank you for asking.
And thanks to everyone for listening.